You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
I love the start of a new year. It holds so much promise. Like many, I resolve to eat better, exercise more, read more books, practice my Spanish, and spend more quality time with friends, family, and yes, my cats. Having resolutions for your cats is also a great idea, but don't ask them what they want. They'd probably say more treats, a slow mouse to chase, and a cushier bed on which to lounge. I would, however, ask Dr. Jane Brunt. She's the executive director of the Catalyst Group, a group dedicated to the health and welfare of cats. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Brunt, you have some fabulous information on how to keep our cats healthy in 2013 and in all the other years too. What is your number one health concern for kitties?
Well, certainly obesity, just like with people and children, is really a huge concern facing our pet population today. And cats, you know, it's estimated that 40 to 50% of cats are overweight or obese. And that is very concerning because we know the health factors, the risks for being overweight that can lead to things like diabetes and joint problems, arthritis, we know, and just the overall inactivity. So that is the number one health problem, certainly in my practice.
I agree with you, and mine also. People come in, and it's frustrating because oftentimes they're not coming in on a routine basis as they will with their dogs. Number one, I think because cats don't like to come in. And number two, because cats hide their signs of illness so well. I tell people when a cat feels good, what does it usually do when it's an adult? Sleep. And what does it do when it doesn't feel good? Sleep. So, number one, how do you know when a kitty is obese? We just look at them as being fluffy.
Well, yeah, that's a hard one. And there are scores that your veterinarian can take. They can do measurements and feel the ribs and look at the profile and give them a body condition score. And that's pretty accepted in the veterinary community. There's also a muscle condition scoring system. And it's really important to know and track your cat's scores through their lifetime, because if they start out where they are, say, 1 year old and they've got normal body condition, they're not too lean, they don't have an extra pouch hanging down. But then the following year, maybe there's a little bit of weight gain and a little more pouch. And identifying it early before it has a chance to become such a problem that the owner would even notice, then it's much easier to address.
So getting that cat into the veterinarian to making sure that it's healthy, that its weight is normal. I honestly got myself a new kitten recently. I'm having so much fun, and I'm trying to do something different where at least once a week, I'm popping that baby into its carrier, taking it the car ride to the practice so it can be socialized to everyone there. And the trip is only about 20 minutes. And oh my goodness, it is caterwauling the entire time.
Oh, I can imagine. And even as a veterinarian, you're not alone, I'm not alone. It is a challenge to condition cats to carriers because historically, and I'm going to encourage you to try and do it and have the carrier out maybe even a little more than the once a week because historically, the carrier comes in from the garage or down from the attic or the shelf in the guest bedroom closet, and then the cat sees the carrier, and it means that the cat's going to go in the carrier, and they associate that with the car ride and the travel, and often that's the trip to the veterinarian, which is so necessary. So having the carrier, so there's some strategies that you can think about doing. First of all, you ready for this?
Help me. I need help. I can only turn the radio up so loud. Yes.
Yes, excellent. But, I mean, people don't think about leaving the carrier out, and they might want to put it away and just leave it for when they need it. But the best thing that you can do is have it out and have it be part of your cat's environment. It gives them a place to hide. It lets them know it's not threatening. And there's some tricks to even doing that. We know that cats like heat. So having the carrier out in an area where maybe there's a sunbeam or next to a radiator, having it where it's warm, that makes it a pretty inviting place to go. And furthermore, cats like to get up on top of things. I mean, you all know every day we say, oh, don't get on the counter. Don't jump up on my dresser. You'll knock things over. I have a whole slew of papers on the floor next to my desk because my cat likes to help me when I work. But they like vertical height and they like to get up on things. So where maybe might you want to put the carrier? Well, how about up on a chair or a sofa and have it open and have it warm? And you want to make it inviting. So another trick would be to have a nice soft fleece blanket or maybe an old fleece shirt that you no longer wear that has a little bit of your scent on it and have that be in the bottom of the carrier, nice and cozy and soft. So the cat wants to be in there. And then finally, you can encourage them and do some maybe fishing pole toys and treat them when they go near and treat them when they go in. It is all about training and conditioning, but you want to make it available, you want to make it comfortable and inviting, and then you want to make it so that they can spend a little bit more time in there.
I'm going to have to give that a try because I'm working on it, but I need all the suggestions, so these were some great ones. One of the things I am so adamant about, and my clients know it, before I even walk in the door, my room technician will go in and get all the vitals and get the weight, and they'll many times have that sheepish look of, I know, it's overweight. Dr. Cruz is going to get me. It's like, so, yes, obesity is the real problem, and I'm a stickler for it. But in cats, getting them to exercise, I know on your website you have a video of a cat walking in Central Park. Really?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And truly, that is outside of the norm, typically, and it is safer for cats to be inside the house. But you do want to have them have an opportunity to have activity. So just like that Abyssinian in Central Park, when the owner's gotten it conditioned to being on the harness and taking it out, it's exploring, and it's safe because it's on the harness, and it gets to be out in the environment. But there are some steps that you want to take before you take your cat outside.
Such as?
Yeah. So you want to make sure it's protected from all the diseases that it might sniff or get exposed to as it's walking in the soil, things like feline panleukopenia and even rabies. You know, in my house in Maryland, I had a rabid bat in my front yard.
And
that
my goodness.
Was real. Yes, very scary. So you don't think of things like that if you tend not to think of things like that when your cat is totally indoors. And even if they don't go outside, they still should be protected against those diseases. But obviously, certainly before they go out, you want to make sure they have their vaccines up to date and your veterinarian can help you with that. Secondly, parasite prevention. That's so important for cats. And again, even if they don't go outside, anywhere that dogs can get heartworms spread by mosquitoes, so can cats. And, you know, I like to say, I tell my clients, there's no such thing as an outdoor-only mosquito. Mosquitoes come in through screens, and when you're in an endemic area like I am in Maryland, it is a problem. So because the disease is a little different in cats, they get lung disease compared to dogs where they get lots and lots of worms in their heart. But it's still devastating, and you can't treat it once they get it. So parasite prevention for heartworm is a once a month. Talk to your veterinarian about that. If dogs in your area take heartworm prevention, so should your cat. Now, the other parasites, particularly if they go outside, roundworms, hookworms, fleas, and ticks, all of those can be prevented. And your veterinarian can choose the best medication or the best topical, because not all topicals are equal in terms of parasite prevention. So make sure you ask your veterinarian, let them know exactly what your cat's lifestyle is. Even if you don't get it out into Central Park, maybe it escapes every once in a while. And that's when they're at risk, when they're most at risk. So that's really, really important to be proactive and make sure your cat's on the preventative.
Before we went on the air, I was talking to my producer, and in the background was this somewhat nervous noise going, what happened? What's going on? And he has a dog and cat, and the dog must have brought in a tick from just walking the neighborhood in Florida, jumped off the dog onto the owner, and it's like, "Rah!" So yes, you can have your own dog going for a walk in the neighborhood, and your cat is totally indoors, and still have exposure to fleas and ticks. And one of the things that's always, it happens at least once a year, and I'm sure you see it too, where a client's trying to save a little money and has a product that's been working great on their dog for flea and tick control and puts it on the cat just a little bit. And now the cat is extremely ill, because not all products that you can put on a dog can you safely put on a cat.
Exactly. And some of the ways that cats metabolize drugs because of their different liver enzymes, it's really important to work with your veterinarian and choose the safest, best product for your cat. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. It's not safe to use products that are labeled for use in dogs only in cats.
And also, to go back to your concern of having that rabid bat in your front yard, I was at a conference, they were talking about rabies being spread by bats and showed the bite of a bat on a human. And I get paper cuts that are bigger than this. So we've had situations where here in Southern California, where I am, probably 10 miles away from the practice, a rabid bat flew into the home. Here is a cat, was totally indoors. The bat came in. Of course, now the kitty goes, ooh, bird, and it's not flying very well.
Right.
Let's play with it. And that was the way that the kitty got exposed to it. And then, of course, the people through the cat. So even totally indoor cats do need to be vaccinated, especially for rabies.
Absolutely. And states now have that required. But here again, people are less in tune to providing care for their cats, or think that they don't need it because they think, oh, cats can take care of themselves. They, you know, they really don't need much human interaction or help. And studies have shown that cats get far less veterinary care. They get far less preventative care for the parasite prevention and even vaccines. And yet it's so important. Cats are the most commonly affected domestic pet for rabies.
And the most common pet now in the United States also, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Cats have outnumbered dogs. Owned cats have outnumbered pet dogs now for over 10 years. And it's really, in one way, it's like very exciting. Catalyst Council, it talks about cats being America's number one companion. Yet there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect because in shelters, they're relinquished at far higher rates. And we know that nationwide, for every 4 cats that go into a shelter, only 1 finds a permanent home. So now certainly there are communities that do far better than that. And it's just something that we need to continue to work on, educating the public, making sure proper spay-neuter population control measures are happening, and the preventive care for cats.
Because in my area, there are a lot of coyotes and cars, and people, thankfully, are keeping their kitties indoors more. One of the things when people bring in their pets, and I'll look at them going, ooh, your cat is naked. And they look at me like, you have a problem here. It's fur. What do you mean it's naked? It doesn't have a collar. It doesn't have identification. Going, but it's totally an indoor cat. Going, uh-huh. For me, I tell them earthquakes, fires, floods, in the vernacular, oops, happens. And now you have a cat that's totally outdoors, obviously is owned by someone, but no identification. Please address the subject of identification. Various ways people can safely ID their pets.
Absolutely. And you know, we always recommend microchipping as a form of permanent ID and keeping that information up to date so that if a cat is lost and rescued through a shelter, they're always scanned, and we're always scanning for a microchip. But that visual collar and tag is such an important feature, because that way somebody knows this cat's owned, and if it's lost, then that information is readily available as well.
With the various types of collars, I'll also instruct my clients that I personally don't like the belt buckle type of a collar, because if they get caught, they can hang themselves. I personally don't like the stretchies, because they seem to be able to get out of those quickly. But the ones with the safety clasp, if you apply it, so you can, for a woman, maybe get two fingers under the collar as the cat's resting with a little bit of a wiggle, so it's not going to be so tight they can't breathe, and not so loose it's going to get caught in their mouth, and check it periodically, because like you and I, our weight changes sometimes.
Exactly. You touched on such an important point, and that is making sure that a collar's snug enough. And it's pretty common that people will try and put a collar on, or say, when cats come into my practice naked, oh, I tried, and she got it off, and she always loses it. And I simply point out, and we look together at how tight it should be, that frequently people are leaving them some, thinking they're doing a favor and leaving it hang down and some wiggle room, when in actuality that's far more dangerous than having it one or two fingers snug tight. And I always tell people, make sure if you can slide any more than two fingers, and in a cat, which, you know, might have the diameter of their neck, say, of, oh, what would be a sausage or something like that, a large bologna ring, you don't want it so loose that it can slip right off. You want to have just the one finger, and that's plenty snug enough. There was an interesting study, Dr. Cruz, about different collar types and how well they stayed on. And I think that was out of University of Florida with Dr. Levy's group. And they reported that the plain old leather collars seemed to do best as far as retaining them. That said, making sure they're applied and they wear them properly. That's the key. So I like the breakaway ones too, and the stretchy ones in my hands seem to lose their stretch, so then they get loose and saggy, and then the same thing happens. They can get their jaw or a leg or a branch caught on it. And then the snug, the nice new snug, flat banded breakaways, if you will, that can be adjusted. And then that way, too, you start off on a kitten, and there's room for it to grow, but always making sure you can slide no more than one or two fingers underneath the collar. If you can slip three under, it's too loose.
Too big. We're talking right now with Dr. Jane Brunt. She is a veterinarian and the executive director of the Catalyst Council. We'll be right back after the short break of ways that you can have some great resolutions for a healthy new year for your kitty. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Go to PetcoDeals.com and get $6 off your order of $60 or more, and up to 40% off hundreds of items at Petco.
PetcoDeals.com.
But that's not all.
Are you talking to me?
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to AudibleDeals.com.
That's AudibleDeals.com.
The
New Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radial root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. Go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com
to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com and save up to 30% on awesome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats,
and more.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com today. PetSmartDeal.com.
Ever wonder what it would be like to live in a perfect world for cats? I'm Pamela Merritt from The Way of Cats. Long-time cat rescuer, full-time cat appreciator. Join me and my cats James Bond, RJ, Olwen, and Tristan in a perfect world.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Okay, Dr. Brunt. So, we're going to keep our kitties at a healthy weight. We're going to try to get some exercise, either walking it on a harness or playing with some feather toys. Teaching the kitty that going to the veterinarian is not that bad because we're going to keep our carriers out and make it an inviting place for them to go. How often would you recommend that a kitty comes into a veterinarian for a wellness exam? Because oftentimes people don't bring it in unless they're sick.
Yes, and that's, you know, there. Once we have a good scientific study to say whether once a year or every 6 months is better, we don't have that data yet. I know in my hands, in my practice, that if we can see the pet when it's well, I'm not talking about sick pets that need to come every couple, 3 months, but when it's well, if we can actually physically put our hands, ears, eyes, a nose, everything on a cat and weigh it every 6 months, we're far ahead of the curve. Because if you think about it, it makes sense. First of all, the year in our time frame is far different from that of a year in the lifetime of a cat. Now, it's not exactly a 7 years equals 1 year. It's longer, more years in the earlier stages, and as few as 4 years in the later years for every 1 year of cat's life. But what that means is that if you're only doing it every year, 15 or 16 times a cat's life, then a lot of things can happen in a short period of time. So we really, really stress from the very beginning when they're kittens, and even in the young ages, when they're kittens and we complete all their kitten vaccine series and they're spayed and neutered, we're usually finished up with that by about from between 4 to 6 months of age. So if you add 6 months to that, we want to see that cat again, not in a year when it's already a year and a half, but in 6 months. And that way we're able to see what its body weight is, make sure that it's not becoming kitten pudgy, and start the cat on a good regimen for exercise and diet. And then we follow that. The two big things that we like to follow, especially in the early years, and prevent and treat early rather than later, are weight gain and dental disease. So that's every 6 months. I am passionate about that. And the people that adhere to that and the cats that do come in, we're far ahead of the curve.
Dental disease is, oh, such a topic. People think tuna breath, that's just part of having a cat. And no, you can't brush their teeth. And no, I don't want to put them under anesthesia to have its teeth cleaned. And there have been too many times, and I honestly do not remember ever learning this in veterinary school, and now I see it way too often, feline absorptive lesions, these cavities that form in cats that are so different than cavities that you and I get. Please educate me and the listeners.
We call them resorptive lesions, and they're a little hard to spot when they're small because they happen right at the gum line, and you described them pretty well. They are like a cavity, not with decay, but they're like, sometimes I call them like an ulcer in the tooth. And the cavity or the ulcer, this resorptive lesion, is actually a dissolving type of lesion that dissolves through the enamel layer into the dentin, and they're painful. The gum tries to grow over these little holes when they're small at first, so you might see a little outpouching of redness that, you know, on the surface you might think, oh, that's not a big deal, but then if you can take an instrument or lift under that and see if there's a little indentation, that means that there is a resorptive lesion starting, and that needs to be addressed. What you want to do, though, is not get to that. So every 6 months, when your cat is coming in, if it has a little red line of gums, that's stage one periodontal disease. Red line of gums, stage one, that's the only stage that's reversible. And that's where you want to do the prophylactic cleaning. And if you're able to, and this is another conditioning thing. You said brushing my cat's teeth. And yeah, it is hard if you're just starting out with, okay, my cat's three, it has stage one, and now my doctor says, my veterinarian tells me I've got to brush her teeth. Okay, I've got all this stuff lined up. I've got the brush out, the toothpaste. Let's go.
And the cat's now under the bed.
You can imagine that's not how it's going to work. And the best way to start that is just when they're a kitten, have it be a cool thing. This is a little bit at a time. You take a little dab of that flavored pet toothpaste, and they do make tuna-flavored toothpaste, and
Yum.
They make malt flavor and poultry flavor and beef flavor toothpaste, and it doesn't foam up, so you want to leave the crest in the drawer. But what you want to do is get them used to that little flavor, have it be a treat, and you do that a little bit every day, and then you rub a little bit on their lip, and then gradually you can work up to the little cat toothbrush. And it's not a big deal. It doesn't take long. And if you can do that in conjunction with the meal and they're ready to get fed right after that, that's terrific. That's terrific. So even though we like to brush our teeth after a meal or before we go to bed, you can hook it up at any time, because the idea is to every day remove the plaque to reverse that stage one periodontal disease. Have your veterinarian do a professional dental cleaning. It's important. It's critical to get under the gums and do it while it's reversible before those resorptive lesions happen, because they are painful and they progress.
I'm not sure in your area if you have this particular service, but in mine, it's too common. People will take their cat, oftentimes their dog, to their groomer and have a good bath done and a hair clipping if necessary. And people come in going, oh, but I have my pet's teeth cleaned when I take it to the groomer. And I take a step back going, so last time you had your teeth cleaned, you were at the beauty shop. Is that correct?
Oh, good for you. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and they go, what are you talking about? Please, if you could now address non-anesthetic dentistries being done by groomers, what your views are on that.
Well, it's anybody that's not licensed to practice veterinary medicine. It's critical to have a patient, one of our patients, under anesthesia so that we can thoroughly assess all of the teeth surfaces, probe under all the gum lines, take radiographs. Can't do that with them awake, and you can't appropriately clean under all the teeth, under the gum line, do the professional polishing and apply the fluoride. It's quite a process. And when the mouth doesn't have advanced disease, because you don't want it to get to the point where you have to do extractions, it's a very quick and thorough service that your veterinarian can do. So having someone that's not licensed to practice veterinary medicine to do a non-anesthetic cleaning, I think we get hung up on sometimes, and you mentioned earlier, I don't want my pet to have anesthesia, it's too dangerous. Well, you know, so is walking across the street or drying the dishes. However, we know that the risks of not doing it open the door for far greater problems. So anesthesia today in pets is the same as it is when in people. Pets have an IV catheter put in, they're monitored, they have someone with them checking their heart rate, their respirations, their oxygenation level, even their what we call the end tidal CO2. So all of these are instruments that are necessary for the safety and well-being of your pet. And yes, someone not licensed in veterinary medicine is not going to be able to do an appropriate job, and in fact could hurt them.
And oftentimes people will come in and the teeth look marvelous, but they're mobile, they're wiggly, or there's a tooth root abscess, this swelling underneath the eye, you know, other issues going on. And it's like, how can that be? You know, the teeth look so good. It's like, oh, you've been going to your groomer. So yes, it is a false sense of security. It's cosmetically good, but it's not medically well done for your pet. And you're right, in the long term, that dental disease can cause problems for the liver, the kidneys, the joints, the heart muscles. So it's not just in the mouth. It has whole body ramifications.
Not to mention the pain.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, there are times I've had to extract many teeth going, but how could you do that? It's not going to be able to eat. It must not have been painful because the pet was still eating, going, it didn't have much of a choice, did it?
Exactly. Even cats are notorious because of various oral diseases they get. It's not uncommon for them to need a whole mouth extraction, where even if all the teeth aren't mobile, the gum disease is just so advanced and so severe that that's the only thing that's going to resolve the stomatitis. And when we do whole mouth extractions, those cats are so much better. I'm sure you've experienced the same thing, that people after the procedure just say, thank you so much. My cat, dog, whatever, is so much better now that you've taken care of its dental disease. I had no idea that this was causing them to be sluggish or not eat as well. They do fine even when they've had whole mouth extraction.
And sometimes prefer to eat dry food versus canned. So, yes, it is amazing. Well, Dr. Jane Brunt, you've also been talking a little bit about spay and neuter. I mentioned I have a new kitten, and I decided, okay, I was going to do this a little bit early. I typically spay a cat or a dog about 6-7 months of age. But she was about 4, and I took her in, and oh my goodness, inside, she was already thinking of becoming a loose woman. She was already showing activity in her ovaries that she was going to be going into heat.
Oh my.
I was very surprised. Spaying and neuter, oftentimes people are concerned that kitties are going to get fat, that they're going to run into behavioral issues. Catalyst Council, what does Catalyst believe about spaying and neutering?
Well, certainly the population challenge. We mentioned the number of pet cats outnumbering the number of pet dogs in the United States, about 80 million pet cats compared to about 70 million pet dogs. And that doesn't count the what we call community cats, feral, free-roaming, unowned, maybe lost, all of those other cats that aren't counted outdoors. And that's part of what contributes to the population problem, the overpopulation problem of all pets, but most notably cats, because after all, people think that cats can take care of themselves and they should be able to be outside and roam, and so they breed. And the feral colony management, people that are committed to spay neuter and keeping the colonies under control, they are, I mean, just bless them. It is such a wonderful thing that they're doing to be able to keep these cats that aren't owned in a community but still spaying and neutering. And you mentioned, you know, 6-7 months, and gosh, I can remember where when we used to say, oh, let them go through a heat cycle. And we know now what we didn't know then is that if there is estrogen released by that ovary, whether it's starting at 4 months of age precociously or whether it's 6 or 7, but if there's estrogen that starts to circulate in that cat or dog system, then that sensitizes the mammary glands to have an increased likelihood of breast cancer. And that could even be years later. But we know, and the studies do tell us, that spay-neuter after going through a heat increases the chances of breast cancer tremendously. So backing up, let's do it before they go into heat. You know, many shelters are spaying and neutering at 8 weeks of age before they go out to their home, so there's not a chance of that spay-neuter slipping through the cracks at 4 or 5 months of age and the cat getting pregnant and having more kittens. So many shelters do it at 8 weeks of age. And studies are being undertaken whether that is, certainly we know it's safe because it's been being done for decades. How does it change their metabolism? Well, maybe that's not so clear, but that's where the every 6 months coming in, fine-tuning your cat's diet, making sure your veterinarian keeps up with what is the best diet for this life stage, for this body condition, for my cat's lifestyle, because there are guidelines. American Association of Feline Practitioners has the feline life stage guidelines. And we know that at different life stages, be it kitten, junior, young adult, adult, mature, or senior, that they have different nutritional needs. And of course, every cat is different, and that can vary. But that's why it's so important to follow weight, size, body condition score, muscle condition score, and then also doing the lab work to tell us, how are those kidneys doing? What's happening with the liver? So I know, Dr. Cruz, you're very thorough and comprehensive veterinarian, and you've probably been able to follow many of your patients through the years and keep them happy and healthy longer just because you've been able to follow and address those problems before they get to be problematic.
I try, and this is what I love so much about talking to people such as yourself, because you're really educating the pet owner. Dr. Brunt, if somebody wanted to learn more about general cat care, I know Catalyst is a great vehicle in which to disseminate information. Where can people learn more about? What is the Catalyst website?
CatalystCouncil.org, so Catalyst, Council, CouncilCouncil. .org. And if you think about a catalyst, is something that creates change, and it's our purpose and mission to create change for cats, for the positive, to get more adopted and get them in homes, to get them the care that they deserve and need. And that's why veterinarians and shelters across the United States are working together to get that information out to people so they are educated. And I might also add that the veterinary associations and the shelter organizations that work with us, that are part of our group, certainly the American Association of Feline Practitioners, the American Animal Hospital Association, the American Veterinary Medical Association, which has their own little whole cat section in the AVMA website called Cats Rule. And all of the information about cats in those different websites are really comprehensive. And those would be the primary, premier veterinary association websites. The Society of Animal Welfare Administrators are welfare shelter professionals that really do the work to make sure cats and dogs are home, to make sure communities are cared for. And Catalyst this year is working on programs to help communities where shelters and veterinarians can work together to better their communities for the pets that live there.
And that's what it really takes. Teamwork to keep your pet healthy, to keep it in that family with you as long as possible, as healthy as possible, increasing the lifespan, but most importantly, the lifespan, but the health span. Thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking to Dr. Jane Brunt, the executive director for the Catalyst Council. You can learn more by going to the website. You can see that on our website, The Pet Doctor, at Pet Life Radio. So thank you so much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.